I'd like to ask you all for a moment of silence in gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. Thank you very much. My name is Pat, and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the Breathe Easy Group, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Yesterday was Canada's birthday. And today is a birthday for all of us. The meeting prior to this was called A New Freedom. Welcome all of you to A New Freedom in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am sober today by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And because of you and the day that I walked into the rooms of an AA meeting on a snowy, wintry night, December the 3rd of 1980, in Edmonton, Alberta, I've not found it necessary to take another drink of alcohol from that time till this. And for that, I am forever grateful. Today's meeting is the big book, Sharing Our Experience. For those who do not have a big book, this one's a little faded. It's 30 years old. It's not bright blue anymore, but it looks like this. It is a textbook for recovery. And I would suggest strongly, if you don't have one, please get one. And I think you may find, correct me if I'm wrong, some of these books here in San Antonio. Because of this book, The Program of Recovery, and the 12 steps that are listed in it, I was able to serve my area, the delegate of Area 78, Alberta and the Northwest Territories, Panel 56. And for that, I am forever grateful. May I ask, is there anyone here from the Northwest Territories or Nunavut? I don't see any, but if you see anyone, please give them a hug from Pat. Now I'd like to introduce our speakers, and you're in for a real treat. We have three wonderful members of Alcoholics Anonymous in recovery. And first, I would like to introduce Bubba from Texas.
My name's William Hayden Rowell, and when I was born, my sister couldn't say brother, and I've been Bubba ever since. I'm alcoholic. And I'm sober by God's grace in Alcoholics Anonymous since the third day of March in 1988. And I'm sorry?
You might have to hold it up there.
Sorry, I didn't think I spoke that softly. On the second day of March in 1988, I wouldn't have told you that that was one of the best days of my life, but as it turns out, it's one of the best days of my life. The best thing that ever happened to me was being a fallen down alcoholic, and what happened after that, that I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And this faded blue book, the gift wrap book, the greatest tool that we have to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers is our experience, and it's in this book, and it saved my life many, many times. Every time I go back to it, I find something useful, and it seems like it means something a little different to me every time I do it. When I go through it with a new sponsee, I find that the things that this person needs to talk about and the steps in the book help me with some situation that I'm having, and I'm grateful for that. I grew up out in West Texas, Northwest Texas, and in a little town called Leveland, and it was a great place to sit on the front porch and watch your dog run away from home. It's so flat out there. I started drinking when I was about 12 years old, and I drank as often as I could, as much as I could. And, you know, I always knew that I had it, but I never knew what it was until I was about 35 years old and landed up in an institution, and they introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it didn't take me long to be convinced after I started reading the book that I had it, and I had the allergy that the doctor talked about, and the obsession. And when I started drinking, I couldn't stop. And what really puzzled me about that was, who wants to stop once they start drinking? And it was never in my head. Finally, over a period of years, realized that the reason that I didn't want to stop is because I couldn't stop, and I couldn't cop to that, you know. But I finally did. I came to believe that a power greater than myself, which was the good people in Alcoholics Anonymous, could restore me to sanity. I turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, which was the good people in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I could see that something was going on in these rooms. Something was happening in these rooms, and it wasn't happening for me. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard a preacher say this one time right after I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm curious. You know, I've always been spiritually curious. And I watch these preachers on TV because I think they're going to tell me something that I need to know. And this preacher said, so you're tired of living the way you're living, and you don't think you can go on another day, that you would rather be dead than go on the way that you're going. And I had to agree with that statement. I would rather be dead than go on the way I was going. My little wife, had a moment of clarity and packed up the kids and left me on the first day of March, 1988. And I had to do something. I had to stay in the house all day and take an inventory of my actions over a good long period of years. And I had to make a decision. You know, I know now I had to make a decision to take my little 38 with me and try to get drunk enough to finish the job, or to go tell someone something was wrong with me. And it's the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my whole life, was go tell somebody something was wrong with me. And I went and told them, and immediately God started working in my life. And it's taken me a good long time to understand that God's had His hand on me my entire life. And God never left me. I left Him. I walked away. My family members, that little church I used to have to go to, little Baptist church out in West Texas, until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and they said, God, as you understand Him, that's the first time I'd ever heard that. The little church that I went to never said that to me. And you know what? It wasn't the church. It was what I heard. It was what I heard. I'd had the spiritual term prejudices, what the big book calls spiritual term prejudices, all my life. And I brought those into Alcoholics Anonymous with me. And I really wasn't aware of it. I wasn't aware of it. I had a couple of people confront me about that, as they did my resentments and my fears. And I came to understand that I'd been shutting out a huge part of my spiritual growth with these spiritual term prejudices. And a few years ago, I read a book that was suggested I read 19 years ago, and it helped me with that. And I finally understood what that meant in the big book and had some people explain that to me. I did an inventory after 16 months, ran around, talked to everybody that hadn't done it, and instead of the people that had. And after 16 months, I was going to commit suicide or I was going to drink again. And for me, it's the same thing. And I wrote an inventory, and I swallowed some huge chunks about myself, and I found out some things about me, and I started being more aware of these things. And I always liked what Jim Williams used to say about the sixth and seventh step. It was only about that big in the book, so I skipped it. Couldn't be that important. And that's what I thought I did. And I thought if I only managed well, I'd, if I made a little more money, my family would love me. And I was really a bad misconception about sobriety and living sober. And I went out in the world and tried to make a little more money and be okay. And I wasn't, you know the story. I took a traveling job. What every drunk needs, a traveling job. And 5 years later, I came back in to get off the road and got more involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my old sponsor had leukemia and passed away. And I had to get a new sponsor and go back into the steps again. And I want to invite anyone that's here that's on the fringe to come back in. You know, the water's fine in here, I found out. And I can surrender again, and I can start over again. I don't have to drink, and I don't have to leave. And you taught me that, and I'm grateful for that. The people that I work with, I try to let them know what you let me know on the very first day is that I don't ever have to drink again if I don't want to. And you know, being here this weekend has been a really exciting and exhilarating experience for me. Just walking in this hall and being around you people and with you people, I can feel the love of God in here, the Spirit of God in here, and I'm grateful for that. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life, and I go to it. It's meant to be studied, like it says. It's our textbook, our basic text. And I try to study it with the guys that I try to bring along. I go through it line by line with them, and I have a Webster's dictionary, like I was taught, to look up words I just thought I knew what they meant, and I'm grateful for that. With the grace of God, as I understand Him, and a few well placed words, with God's help. We have the power to save people's lives, and that's what you've done for me. You gave me a life. What I had before was a mere existence. It was not a life. I want to thank you for my sobriety. I want to thank you for carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous in all these different places in the world. I want to thank you for coming to Texas and being a part of this and helping me with one more day of sobriety. And you really didn't think you were going to come to San Antonio and not meet a Bubba, did you? Thank you very much for my sobriety.
I don't know how to tape that up there, but do you want to try? Okay. Hey, we got all kinds in here. We can fix anything, can't we? Yeah. I'm holding it. You know, I never thought that I could get sober. Bubba said he didn't think he could get sober because he lived in Texas, maybe. I didn't think I could get sober. Thank you very much. May I know your name? Hi, thanks, Mike. Okay. I didn't think I could get sober because I worked in the construction business in northern Alberta, and my dad taught me how to do business over a bottle of rye whiskey and a handshake. So I was really, really afraid, and I walked into a meeting room and met you guys. I met a guy from California named Gene Duffy. Is anybody here who knows Gene D? And he told me I could. He came and put on a spiritual retreat in northern Alberta. And he told me I could. And I started going to my first AA meetings. And for the first time since I was 18 years old, December of 1980, I blinked and I hadn't had a drink for 14 days in a row. So I knew you guys had something that I needed. And I stayed with you every single solitary day for at least a year and a half, because I was so afraid that I left you, I'd wind up in a slippery place and would have a hard time getting back. So I will suggest, as Bubba did to you, please stay with us. Now I'd like to introduce Alicia. And Alicia is from Ohio.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm just overwhelmed. I'm so grateful to be asked to speak. And just with, I'm just grateful. Haven't had much sleep either, so hopefully my notes will suffice. My name's Alicia, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Spiritual Basis Group. We meet Sunday morning near the University of Cincinnati at 8:30 in the morning. No half measures for us. And my sobriety date is September 21st, 1991, through the grace of God. I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was a teenager. I had a friend back in the 80s. There were all these care units, and so I was kind of going in support. Really, I was going for all kind of the beatniks and the bikers. And there was just a lot of excitement at these young people's meeting, and I actually recognized a member who came today to support me, but I remember when he had spiked hair. And it was, and I recognized there was no way I was an alcoholic. I mean, there was just, I went to beginner's meeting, I felt like they did, and I thought like they did, but I couldn't possibly be an alcoholic because drinking was very sacred to me, which should have been a red flag, you know, seriously, it should have, but yeah, I did not get sober. I was just along for some vicarious pleasure, I guess. I did get sober when I was 23, and at that time I was still in support of this friend who was trying to get sober. And her sponsor was studying to be a counselor, and I heard a lot about the physical aspects of alcoholism. And I didn't even think I blacked out. I guess I didn't understand what a blackout was. I thought that's when you passed out. Which I deny that I passed out. I just thought I took parties at nap. You know, I just took a little nap at the party, you know. But then somebody explained that blacking out is what you do when you drink so much you can't remember. And that's how I drank. I was primarily a binge drinker. And that's how I drank. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. That can't be right. If blacking out is a symptom of alcoholics, and I black out, and I'm not an alcoholic, that just doesn't make sense. and so there's a, in my home group, we read a part of We Agnostics every week. And one of those lines is, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. And there I was, faced with this alternative. Spiritual life, alcoholic death. I couldn't choose, you know. You know, there I was, because I didn't want to stop drinking. I still had this idea. I mean, drinking was just so magic for me. It just made me feel whole, and I wasn't quite ready to give up that last ace up my sleeve. But the thing is, I wanted what you had. And so I kind of made a decision at that point that, okay, fine. And my understanding of step one was, when I drink, I black out, so therefore I must be powerless over alcohol. Okay, fine. There's my step one, and that was good for me. That was a good beginning. I still was pretty arrogant because I didn't think I'd ever drink again because I had full knowledge of myself. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I can't drink. and that kind of was tied up too. My mother has mental illness, and she's had lots of shock treatments and has been in and out of institutions. So when I finally figured out what was wrong with me, it's like, oh, hooray, I'm not crazy, I'm just an alcoholic. And then 2 years later, I had another really wonderful experience. I hooked up with a sponsor, we went through the steps, and I pretty much kind of balked at making amends. I started working on some financial amends, but I was young, I was involved with YPAWS, there's a Cincy PAW, and I went to a couple international conventions, and these people were getting together, and they were going through the book line by line through a workshop, and so I signed up for that, you know, even though I had worked steps 1 through 5, 6 and 7, and was kind of stuck in 8, I decided to go through this workshop. And at one point in this workshop, you're supposed to pray every day for a week to ask your higher power to show you your alcoholism. So I was praying that prayer. And I understood that the insanity of alcoholism, because I was at work one evening. I went back to school, so I was working later than usual. I was the only one in the office. And the thought, suddenly it came to me. It was just brilliant. I was so excited. If selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problem, all I need to do is work the steps, and I can drink again. And I was so excited. I thought, I figured out how we could drink again. And I called my sponsor to see if she'd still sponsor me, you know, as you know, so I could work the steps and drink at the same time. She wasn't home. you know, and I was just, man, the committee was just going with that one. It was feeding it. I was just really playing around with it in my mind. And after, I don't know, that was towards the end, I kind of had a thought, maybe I should go to the clubhouse down the street and talk to some people about my brilliant idea. And before I left work, there's another part of the big book that kind of came back, I don't know, divine inspiration, I guess. But that line was, and I had to write it down because I hate to misquote. It's in More About Alcoholism on page 30. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death, and but for the grace of God, there go I. Because I was absolutely convinced that I could drink again. 2 years away from alcohol, high bottom, well, I considered a high bottom drunk, and I had absolutely convinced myself that it was okay if I drank. And so it really helped me to understand that this problem of mine centers in my mind, that what I have, well, I'll let the big book say it. On page 37, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? And there I was. If I would have had that thought in the grocery store or at Applebee's or some other place, I'm absolutely convinced I would have drank again. So it gave me a new sense of powerlessness, that what I had was a daily reprieve. Here it is, page 85, into action. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So I took the workshop a little bit more seriously, and needless to say, I was willing to make some amends. It furthered that process a little bit. And it was progress, not perfection for me. Okay, what was the other thing I was going to say? The favorite part of the big book for me, and when people ask me to sign their big book, I usually try to squeeze my name in on page 25. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude and toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. because for so long I was living on the assumption, this is my universe. You know, everything was about me. I was just so self-centered. And the book talks, too, about that self-centeredness. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. And so for me, my life of sobriety is to really try to fit myself a big and maximum service to God and my fellows. I mean, the process of doing the steps, that's what it's all about. It's not about me getting happy, which has also happened beyond my wildest dreams, but it's really about me being of maximum service. And through that process, man, I've had lots of adventures in sobriety. It has been such an incredible adventure, which one of my sponsors promised it would be. And I think just that process of really knowing how powerless we are over alcohol. And for me, I was very lucky. I got to see how mentally I'm powerless over alcohol as well. To work those steps and I'm not perfect. Believe me. Ask people. There's people here who know me. I'm not perfect. But it brings me to a place of humility. That is not my universe anymore. That I can be a drunk amongst drunks. And one of my favorite things, the long form of step 12, and finally we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And because I've been willing to go through the big book and work these steps through the big book and use the experience of my sponsors and different workshops and just be willing to have a spiritual experience, oh my God, my life is just so incredibly rich. It's beyond my wildest dreams. I had the honor and the privilege to share as our area delegate to the General Service Conference. So I have friends from Canada and other people in other parts of Ohio that I know from General Service. And it is such a blessing. And the biggest blessing of my life is that I'm not that scared 23-year-old who doesn't want to leave her house before 10 o'clock at night because I might run into somebody who wants to talk to me. I have you all, and I am so eternally grateful to have you in my life and to have my life, which is a direct result of this book. Thank you.
Thank you, Alicia. Alicia has just shown us how she's found herself and the answers to her drinking problem in our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our book has been translated, I believe, at this time into approximately 44 different languages and dialects. So there is a book here for all of you in this room. Now it's my privilege to introduce our third speaker. And our speaker is Jim from Missouri. Please welcome Jim.
My name is Jim and I am an alcoholic. You people are in big trouble because they left me way too much time. I'll talk a little more about this later, but for the last 6 months or so, I've been going to a newcomers meeting in a treatment facility. And it's not just the patients. They actually bus them in from a different treatment facility, so we have a lot of new people there. At the beginning of the meeting every Monday night, they ask how many people have 30 days or less sobriety and introduce themselves and ask if they want a newcomer's packet. So they go around the room and there'll be 20 or so people that have 3 days, 9 days, 15 days, 30 days is a real long time in that group. That's a real long time for any alcoholic, but in that group it's especially long. That's kind of changed my way of thinking a little bit. I want to tell you today that so far I've been sober for 9,651 days. Okay? And as I tell everybody else in sobriety, if you want the answers, you're going to have to work for it. I'm not going to tell you how many. I might tell you how many years that is. Anyway, that's been an interesting experience. As I said, I'll speak about that a little more. I was really pleased before the meeting, my friend John W. showed up. I didn't know he was going to be here. I first met John when he was bringing the message of Alcoholics Anonymous into the jail that I was living in. As I got there the same way that I got here, it was just a long and unfortunate series of bad breaks and misunderstandings. As a result of one of those misunderstandings, I was spending some time. It wasn't a hard time. I was doing about a month and a half in a work release center. But John used to bring the meeting in there every Monday night, and I think he did that for about 6 years, and I think he helped a lot of people get sober and stay sober. I appreciate that. But I always say that when John came in and started bringing me the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had been sober for a little bit, but I hadn't been to a whole lot of meetings. But I always said John came in, and John immediately showed me that he had something that I wanted. Okay, when the meeting was over, he got to go home. That was an early experience. I don't think we talked about the book too much then, but I have several experiences with the big book that I'm going to share throughout my sobriety. I actually went into a treatment center. I was sober about 5 weeks when I went into the treatment center, but I wasn't doing meetings or anything. I was just in enough trouble that I knew I had to quit drinking. I basically decided to go to the treatment center because my lawyer said it would be a good idea and it might help me stay out of jail. I went there not necessarily intending to stay sober and hoping to stay out of jail. It worked just the reverse. I went to jail anyway, but I've been sober ever since. They gave me a big book in that treatment center, and they gave me some time to read it. So by the time I got there, actually, I decided I was going to listen to whatever they had to say because I had to quit drinking. I could not continue. The thing that scared me the most about what you people were telling me in the book was step two. Now, I know people are afraid of step four and five and eight and nine, but it was step two that scared the hell out of me. I did not know if I could come to believe in a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. Now, I grew up in I hesitate to use the term religious household, but they practiced the religion and they made me practice the religion. And I pretty quickly rebelled against that, especially when I started drinking. And I had spent almost all of my drinking career, I don't know if I was an agnostic or an atheist, I don't know if it makes any difference. I probably would have argued against there being a God, but I couldn't, I certainly couldn't prove it. And it was, if there was a God, he didn't make much difference in my life. I could not live the way I was brought up in that religion. That was the punishing God, and the way I was living my life, I was in big trouble. So I had to give that up pretty quickly. I pretty well convinced myself that there wasn't a God, or if there was, that he, it didn't matter in my life. So as a result of that, I did not know. I honestly did not know, and I was afraid that I could not come to believe in a higher power, because the only image of a higher power I'd ever been given in my childhood was not something that I could live with. I didn't know yet that I had the freedom to find a higher power of my own. The most important thing I found in the big book in the early readings was in chapter 4. It's about on page 46. I'm not an expert or an authority on the big book. I don't even try to quote it. It's in the book. I don't have to memorize it. I can go read it anytime I want to. But it says in there something to the effect that things started to happen for us when we first became willing to believe. That was easy enough. I could hang my hat on that. I could pick that up and go with it, and I did that. And I talked actually to I think he's a Roman Catholic priest that was at the treatment center. He didn't really give me the answer that I wanted, I thought, but he basically told me to just act as if. So I began on that basis, praying to a God that I didn't understand, that I didn't really believe in, and I did that on a daily basis. I would ask God to help me stay sober, and I would thank him at night for keeping me sober. And I don't know when it happened, sometime in the first year or so, but I found myself praying to a higher power that I did believe in. And I've expanded my understanding of that higher power a little bit as the years have gone by. It's certainly not the God that I was brought up with in that religion, although that God may be a part of it. I don't know what God is. I know how God has revealed himself to me. I say God, you say whatever you wish. And I give everybody the freedom to establish their own relationship with a higher power. It's incredibly important that we establish our own relationship with the higher power. But after that, you know, I read the book. I read the whole book, and I started doing what it said in the book. And pretty soon, I'm a pretty intelligent guy, and I thought, you know, this book was written, published in 1939. It's, you know, got to have been a lot more stuff published since then. As knowledge has advanced in science and technology, there's got to be better answers than this available. All right. So I started reading all kinds of other books, and I did that for a long time. I just kept trying to, I was looking for answers. I didn't know where to find the answers. And sometimes today I still don't know where to find the answers. But that, you know, I kind of set that book up on the shelf. And then after a while I got really very comfortable in sobriety. I always went to meetings and I was doing service work and doing the things I'm supposed to do, sponsoring people. Had a lot of peace in my life, basically, which is all I really ever wanted. So I kind of left the book just sit on the shelf there for a while. I didn't pay much attention to it. And then I guess, let's say, close to 10 years into sobriety, I started going to a Monday night big book study. So I looked around and, you know, a few days I found my big book again and started dragging it to that meeting. And we read that book from the beginning through page 164, and we would read a paragraph or a page, or somebody would start reading and they'd stop whenever they wanted to stop, and we'd just comment on what we had read. And that was really the beginning of my understanding of what's in that book, because when you take it that slowly, I remember one time we went about 4 weeks, 5 weeks in a row reading a page or two, and I know every week it said something in there about self-knowledge, self-awareness is not enough to protect me against the first drink. And that hit me. I thought, okay, there's a lesson there. When they say it every page or two, it must be kind of important, okay? So things changed. I started going to a different meeting. I set the book back up on the shelf, and I didn't pay much attention to it again for quite some time. And then basically, as a result of starting to go into this meeting with all these newcomers, I thought, now, I need to be able to speak to these people and have them identify with my alcoholism if I'm to have any hope of carrying any message to them. And it struck me as being a little difficult for me to try to talk to people that weren't born the last time I had a drink of alcohol, which, if you haven't done the math yet, it's a little 26 and a half years ago, something like that. And, I mean, literally, there's a number of people in there every week that were not born the last time I had a drink of alcohol. So I got that book out again, and I started reading the book again. And every answer I needed for those questions is in that book. That book tells exactly what I need to do to talk to anybody that wants to talk to me about recovery from alcoholism. It emphasizes, well, for me, what I get out of it. You may get something different out of it. It emphasizes to me that my alcoholism is not what I did. It's not the fact that I went to jail or got fired from a job or got divorced or any of the other things. Those things happen to normal people, too, sometimes. I say normal people. Loosely. I use that term very loosely. What alcoholism is to me is basically, as Dr. Silkworth described it, it's the mental obsession and the physical craving. I can identify with that physical craving. There were times, back in the old days, I'm talking the 70s and early 80s, you know, there were times when we went out and we actually had that three martini lunch, okay? And I would do that sometimes, and I would go back to my office, and I would be completely useless for the rest of the day because I couldn't think about anything except getting back out of the office and getting something to drink. I mean, I try to explain it. My brother has a son-in-law who may have a drinking problem, and he can't understand if his son-in-law comes over and he's had a couple of drinks, he wants more to drink. I said, no, you never will understand. But I said, I understand. That's a very, very powerful physical craving that he cannot control. Okay? And when I talk to alcoholics, you know, there's a lot of alcoholics. I see heads bobbing up and down like there. You know what I'm talking about. You know what that feels like. Okay? The only thing that do we ever have any chance of controlling, and we can't control it. We need the help of a higher power to do that. But it's that mental obsession. Okay? If I'm living my life fairly comfortably, I don't find the need to pick up that drink. I say all the time that when I get uncomfortable, I get drunk. That's just as true today as it was 27 years ago. Hasn't changed a bit. What the Big Book and Alcoholics Anonymous have taught me to do is to live my life in such a way that I stay fairly comfortable today. And when I get uncomfortable, I know what to do about it. I can call somebody. I can work the steps. I can do what I need to do to deal with that. I don't get drunk and set it on the shelf and let it fester. And then the next one comes along, and I set that one over there. And pretty soon, I got a great big shelf full of resentments. And then I want to get drunk. So if I can deal with things pretty much on a daily basis as they come up, I don't have to carry them around with me, then I got a pretty good chance of staying sober. If I continue to work these steps in the manner that I was taught and to try to carry this message to other alcoholics, on any given day, I have a very good likelihood of not getting uncomfortable enough to drink. That doesn't mean that I'm not going to get uncomfortable, but there's a difference between being uncomfortable and being uncomfortable enough to drink. I can handle it today with the help of that higher power. I hear people say all the time, God doesn't give us things that we can't handle. I do not agree with that. All right? God gives me all kinds of things that I cannot handle. But he gives me nothing that he and I get together can't handle. And that's where my reliance needs to be today, is on that higher power. I brought with me today my special big book. You know, when the fourth edition came out, I don't remember exactly when that was, but I went down to our central service office. I used to be regular down there, and I'd go in there and I'd buy a fourth edition big book, and I'd put it in my car. And I think within a week, I'd find somebody new at a meeting, and I'd give them the book. And I'd go buy another one, and I'd have it in the car, and I'd find somebody, I'd give them the book. I think I bought about 15 of those books, and I still don't have one. I haven't had one for more than 2 weeks, I don't think. I gave away my original copy of the third edition that I got in the treatment center. And this is the one that I'm left with. This, back in the late 80s, when they first came out with the soft cover edition of the Big Book, I was working in the prisons in those days, trying to give back a little of what John gave to me. And for those of you who don't know, this thing came out in soft cover because of the people in prisons. There are a lot of prisons, don't let them have hardcover books. They're very clever people. They can take the hardcover off of a big book, and they can make it into a weapon, and they can kill you with it. Okay. There's good reasons for that. Anybody that doesn't believe that, or not too far from where I live in St. Louis, over in Marion, Illinois, there's a federal penitentiary. And I heard a story, I mean, I know it's a true story. A guy actually took the cellophane wrapper off of his supper, and he used a couple of aspirin tablets as fuel, and he made a little fire, and he turned that plastic cellophane cover into a knife, and he stuck somebody with it. So, anybody that ever goes into a prison, you'll find out they got some really strange rules, but if you look a little further, you find out they have really good reasons for that. Anyway, that book came out, this book, third edition, came out in soft cover in the late 80s. And later on, I think they started printing them like this with just the first 164 pages in it. But this isn't one of those. This is the full third edition of the big book. 10 months after I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, my aunt... I used to drink with my aunt and uncle. I'm sure they were both alcoholic. My uncle died before he ever admitted it, but I drank enough with him to know that he drank like me. So, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. But 10 months after I got sober, my aunt called me and asked me to take her to a meeting and take her to a treatment center, and I did. And she got sober. She stayed sober. She died about 3 years ago. But she actually took one of those books and she cut the stories out of the back and she folded the cover over and she cut it down and she laminated the whole thing and she inscribed it on the inside and she gave it to me for my fifth AA birthday. And I lost her about 3 years ago. And now this has become quite a treasure to me. I still carry it around with me. I take it to that meeting on Monday nights quite often. And part of the reason for that is every year for my son's birthday, we take a little trip out of town together. He just turned 31 years old. He was four last time I had a drink. But we went out of town, and she was very ill. She had lung cancer. She was in a nursing home, and we knew it was pretty much a matter of time. But I left, I think, on Thursday, and I came back. I went down to see her, I think, Monday night after I got back, and she was in very bad shape. The only thing that she could say was, the only thing I could understand that she said was, "You made it back." And that was on a Monday night at 8, 9 o'clock, something like that. And about 2 o'clock the next morning, she died. And there's no doubt in my mind that she stayed alive just long enough for me to get back so she could say goodbye. And I'm always going to be grateful for that. And she always gave me credit for her sobriety, which is absolutely incorrect. God gets the credit, and she gets the credit for what she did. This means an awful lot to me today, so I may never buy a fourth edition big book. I mean, the first 164 pages is still the same, but I'm keeping this one. Bury this one with me. I want to take it along. One of the things I discovered, though, in rereading this book, maybe the most important two sentences I've ever found are the first two sentences in the foreword to the first edition. And again, I don't quote, but it says something to the effect that we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Now, do the math. This was 1939, April, when this book was published. Of those 100 people, first of all, I'd like a recount, okay? I have a hard time believing there was 100 people. But do the math. Probably 50 of them had 6 months or less. The guy that had the most sobriety in that bunch was Bill, and he had 4 years, okay? Bob hadn't gotten to 4 years yet. He didn't get there until June of 1935. Now, just think about what's in this book that was written by people that didn't have more than 4 years of sobriety. So, as I've been back into this book, I think it's the single most important book ever written about recovery from alcoholism. And I don't know that anybody could ever do it any better. And that just amazes me. Now, I mean, you know, the language is a little dated and it seems a little sexist in places. And, you know, I don't know, maybe we could change some of that. But the basic message in here, what it says to me about alcoholism and more especially about recovery from alcoholism and how to carry this message to other people, I can't see how it could ever be topped. And it just astonishes me that those people could write this book. It just amazes me. And as I've thought about that, I've had a fair amount of experience in service work, and I've seen a lot of group consciences in action. And I truly believe that this must be where they got the idea. You know, if those people sitting together could write this book, how powerful does that group conscience have to be, a loving God acting through our group conscience? It just amazes me. No one of those people could have written this book, even though Bill wrote most of it. He stole most of it from other places, by the way. And history will bear that out if you want to check it out. But it just astonishes me. And I've always been amazed by the group conscience process anyway, because I've sat in, you know, assemblies and all kinds of other business meetings where I can kind of see the thing drifting off to what I think is the wrong direction. And then some quiet little voice will say, "Well, what about this?" All of a sudden, it'll come right back. We have a power that we harness as a group, both to direct ourselves and, more importantly, for us to stay sober, that I can't find anyplace else. You know, I've spoken at probation and parole offices with a bunch of new people, and I say, you know, all you have to do is go to a group. I mean, look at this room. I don't know how many people are in here, but I think... I could be wrong. I can't speak for all of you, but I think most of you would say that you can't stay sober by yourself. I can't stay sober by myself. But when we get together in a group, we can stay sober. All right? There is a power within that group, whatever you want to call it, whatever it may be, that enables us to stay sober. And that's all you need to believe today to get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you believe that you can stay sober in the group, it'll work. You go and you listen and you take direction, and you know, as you said, pretty soon you wake up and you think, man, I haven't thought about having a drink in a long time. You know, that's 3 days is a long time for an alcoholic. So this is, to me, is the most amazing book ever written. Well, the second sentence I almost skipped over. That might even be more important. I'll read that so I get it right. That's the preface. Excuse me. Didn't bring my glasses either. Okay. To show other alcoholics, in italics here, precisely how we have recovered, and italics, is the main purpose of this book. This is the directions, folks. This is precisely how we recover in Alcoholics Anonymous. Today, I've read all that other stuff, but now those books are all sitting on my shelf, and this is the one that I read. This is the one that gives me the directions. This is what I need to stay sober today. So I love this book. I was a little nervous when they asked me to speak about my experience with the book, but I thought, you know, my experience is my experience. Nobody else has my experience with this book or with anything else. So I'm the only expert on this book, on my experience with this book, not on this book. I see a lot of experts on this book sitting out there, okay? I'm the only expert on my experience with this book. And it's been a wonderful experience. And, you know, it's no coincidence that I started going to that meeting at that treatment center and started reading this book just a couple of months before they invited me to come down here. So, you know, I don't believe in coincidence. I know that that all came about for a particular reason. I'm very grateful to be here today to share this with you. I'm really delighted to meet my new friends. I got to tell you, though, Pat's not entirely honest. She got up and told you what wonderful speakers and sober people we are. She didn't know that, you know. She just met us. Okay? It's like sometimes after I give a talk, somebody will come up and say, oh, I loved how honest you were in that talk. And I think, how do you know I was honest? I'm a very good liar. I'm a little out of practice, however. I'm grateful to be here. Thank you for coming. Thanks for listening. Have fun at the convention. Thanks.
May we please have another round of applause for our three exceptional speakers. This book is also available in Braille, and it is also available in an audio version. So as I said before, there is a book for everyone who has a seat in the meeting rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous around the world. We have an opportunity now for an open mic for about 15 or 20 minutes. And I would ask you, if you wish to speak, there is a mic in the middle of the room, and share your experience, strength, and hope with Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you wish to maintain the topic of this meeting was the big book, sharing our experience. So if you'd like to line up at the mic in the center of the room, please do so. And limit your conversation, if you will, please, to about 3 or so minutes. I don't have a timer up here as we do at the General Service Office, but I'll give you a wink. Yes, please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Seth, and I'm an alcoholic from San Francisco, California. Thank you very much for what you all said. That was really amazing. And, you know, I've learned, and I wouldn't be alive if it weren't for this program. And I can't imagine being able to do this without what's in the big book. But my experience has been that unless I do what they talk about in the big book, I'm not going to stay sober. You know, I can read the big book like all day, every day for a year, and unless I go out and do those things, it's not going to work, you know. And so, you know, I go to a lot of book studies, and almost every book study I go to, I see stuff that I've read a million times before. And it's like, wow, when did they put that in there? You know, and it's because my experience grows as I do more in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and it's such a privilege to be able to share what's in that book with other people, you know, by showing them, here's how you do a fourth step, you know, here's how to make amends. Now go sponsor other people, show other people how to do this, you know, but until they start doing it, I find that they don't stay sober. You know, they can sit down and like underline the whole big book if they want to. But from what I've seen, you know, unless you really do what's in there, it's not going to make sense to you, for one thing. I mean, I was bored out of my mind when I first started in this program, and I was like, what are these people talking about, you know? And now I can, the big book means so much more to me because the things in there are my experience, you know? And no amount of talking to me and explaining to me that stuff that's in there is going to change things for me, you know? My relationship with God has grown so much through doing these things and messing it up, you know? And I've just got to keep going if I want to stay sober. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Hey, everybody. I'm Matt. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
I'll keep it with what you were talking about there with the big book. I think the most I get out of the big book, to be talking about it right now, is our primary purpose to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And something I'd just like to share with everybody here in San Antonio, you know, one of my favorite parts in the big book is, you know, it can be gay people, straight people, black, white, old, young, female, male, it doesn't matter who we are. You know, there's all types of different people here. And I was just thinking to myself, a newcomer in San Antonio right now to have the opportunity to see this Alcoholics Anonymous members worldwide get together and celebrate the 75th anniversary is, you know, something. I mean, when I first was introduced to this thing, I couldn't even imagine anything like this. And I think it'd be a good point to seek them out, even, you know, as we're out and about in the convention center and whatnot, you know, because that still is my primary purpose here. But thanks, everybody, for being here and let me share. Thanks.
Thank you.
My name is Ryan. I'm a grateful alcoholic. And I'm from the ODAC group in Plano, Texas. I'm very grateful to be here. I have quite an experience with the book. 15 months sober, I found myself going into a Texas prison, still doing it my way. And I finally got willing when I went there. But one of the biggest experiences of my sobriety that I'll never forget was when I was in there, in a lot of prisons, there's not a lot of big books with all the pages. And the books that they had in there were missing several pages out of the first 164, and a lot of the great stories that are in the back. But there was this one page in every book, and it says, "We'd love to hear from you. Write us at the GSO office." And so I did that. And 3 weeks later, I heard back from the GSO office, and they sent me a book. And that was the only full book in that prison that I knew about. There was two other AAs that had experience with the program. One was on the other side of the unit, and the other one slept right next to me. And I did my fifth step with him, and I told him that one thing that I wouldn't tell anybody. But where I'm going with this is that hand of AA was always there for me whenever I finally was willing to ask for help. And I finally got to meet that lady that sent me that book here. And that was the most remarkable, probably one of the most remarkable things I've ever experienced in Alcoholics Anonymous. So what that tells me is that no matter what, wherever I'm at, as it says in the book, to be fit of service, not to go run around looking, oh, I can do this here and do this here, just to be willing. And that's what she did. When I finally asked for help, she was willing to help me. And as a result of that, I celebrated 3 years of sobriety 2 weeks ago. So, but it's nothing I did. I just asked for help. That's all I did. And I did what everybody else does when they come in here. That is happy, joyous, and free. Thank you for my sobriety. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Pam, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
If you're ever in Abington, Mass,
stop at the Early Bird Dawn Patrol. We meet at 7 o'clock in the morning, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And when I came into AA, I couldn't do something like that. The Big Book is what got me sober. I was extremely mentally ill when I came in, and people couldn't really even talk to me. I didn't make sense, and I couldn't retain very much. But they handed me the pamphlet that had How It Works on it. And every morning I read How It Works. And every night before I went to bed, I read How It Works. And every time I felt really, really coming out of my skin, I read How It Works. And I read, rarely have we seen a person fail. And it made such an impression on me because I thought, I'm not going to fail. These people aren't failing. They've got something. Whatever it is they've got, I'm going to get. I don't know how I'm going to get it, but I'm going to get it. But I kept reading, rarely have we seen a person fail. And it made such an impression on me. And about a month into the program, somebody gave me a Big Book. And then I began reading that. And eventually I became a member of Loners International, and you get your things in the mail. Literature is so important. I could get things out of that book that I couldn't get from a person because I wasn't able to communicate with anybody. I'm doing okay today. I think I got the second step. Thank you.
Hi, group. My name's Heather. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. My sobriety date is May 25th of 87, and my home group is the Base Borden Group in Borden, Ontario.
Hey.
Canada. when I was traveling across Canada, my new country, in 2001, I knew the Big Book had just come out, the fourth edition. I had been involved in general service in Utah, Area 69, Panel 43 and 44, and we had talked about the Big Book, the new edition, and we'd said, no, we didn't need one. It's not broken, don't fix it. And my soon-to-be delegate, a guy named Rod B., who was a Native American, got up to the podium, and we had voted it down, and of course, how general service works is if there's any dissenting opinion, please come and we'll talk about it. So Rod came up and said, have you read Welcome to the Tribe recently? And we talked about it, and he said, I couldn't get sober on that story. It was the white folk, and God helped me get sober. And I was just coming out as a lesbian at that point, and I said, hey, guys, have you seen any lesbian or gay stories in the back of the Big Book? And if you look in the first, second, or third editions, there wasn't. And I watched the power of Alcoholics Anonymous change that vote from about 225 to 75 to almost 300-1 to approve the new Big Book. So that was fine. 2001, I'm traveling across Canada, and I went to a small meeting in Elliott Lake, Ontario, and the new Big Book had just come out. It was November. And so we sat down after the meeting, about a dozen of us, and we read one of the Native stories. And the woman who wrote the Native story was there. And we read maybe one paragraph, and we would pass it on because we'd all start crying. And the six of us sat there and read that story. And I met the woman who wrote it. And, if you haven't had a spiritual awakening yet in Alcoholics Anonymous, stay tuned because they're coming. Thanks.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jim Hill, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
And I'm very grateful for this program. It saved my life. And I just want to say my two favorite things about the Big Book were reading it with my sponsor and reading it with newcomers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ed Shepley from London, Ontario, Canada.
Hi.
My home group is the Tuesday North Group. You'll never guess what end of town and what day we meet. But my last drink was July 30th, 1988, thank God. My experience, my biggest mistakes with the Big Book was talking about it, reading it, studying it, discussing it, philosophizing about it, but not doing it. and it continues to be a big mistake at times. And I like to get back to focus. I love big book meetings because I get back to focus. And to try and, every time they say we prayed this, that I pray it. Every time they say we observe this, I try to observe it. And I love the passion of the big book meetings. And I love the kind of life that it gives me when I do it. And I'm not very happy about the kind of life I have when I don't do it. So and it's so nice to have a big book meeting at the conference. And I wish everyone a great conference. I'm having a great time here.
Thank you.
My name is George. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. I'm from Sturgis, Michigan. I celebrated 29 years about a month ago. And this book is so meaningful to me, and I too am glad that there's a big book meeting here on this schedule. I go to a big book meeting on almost a weekly basis, and over the years it's become so, so important to me. But I want to say something to those who may be new who are here, and perhaps some of these things seem a little overwhelming. I was not someone who latched on to the big book right away. I was one of those people who was too smart for his own good. And I'm much dumber now, thank God, than I was 29 years ago. But in those days, I fought the idea of having this old book. And at my own loss, I know now, but... I just want to say to those who are new, and it does seem a little dense, and the answers will be revealed. I had a sponsor, and I had people who urged me to keep going to big book meetings, which I did, and to keep studying along with them. And there was a point, actually, for me about 5 years in, of all things, when another sort of spiritual awakening occurred, and all of a sudden things were just jumping out at me from this book. And it's been indispensable to me since that time. But I guess my message is that some of these things come to us when we're ready. And that book was there, and it was waiting for me. I had a copy of it, but now I'm ready to find what's there and necessary for me to find. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My name is Dan.
We've got time for a couple of more speakers, so if you want to get behind the gentleman at the podium, please do so. Go ahead.
My name's Dan. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic from Sarasota, Florida. And the special thing for me about the big book comes down to this conversation that my first sponsor had with me. And the first thing that he showed me in the book was he took me to the foreword to the second edition that talked about the recovery rate that Alcoholics Anonymous had in 1955, where it talked about how 50% of the people that came to AA and really tried this sobered up at once, and an additional 25% sobered up after some relapses. And the truth about it is in those days, most cities did not have AA meetings. It was not possible to do the 90 meetings in 90 days that we tell people to do. So about the only thing recovering alcoholics had at their disposal was the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so he told me that it was so important to keep the focus on that because, and it's been said today that you're going to hear a lot of other things in AA meetings. But he took me by the hand and he looked right at me and he said, I've got to tell you something, Daniel. You deserve a better than 50-50 shot at having this kind of life. And I have tried to pass that message on to sponsees, and I've had about a 50% recovery rate with them through going through the process of walking them through the book, because I had that spiritual experience that it talks about that makes it not necessary for us to pick up that drink. I remember the moment I had it. I slept like a baby that night. I still sleep well throughout the night. It's the one thing I did that actually changed my life, and hooking up with him and having him, you know, just show me that fact, I think is largely responsible for the sobriety that I have today. And you know, I just can't say enough about how important it is to, if you have been through this process, to just grab somebody and walk them through it. Thank you.
Thank you. I have time for two more speakers.
Go ahead.
I'm DJ, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Fort Dodge, Iowa. My home group is the Monday Night Big Book, and my sobriety date is August 4th, 1979. And my experience with the Big Book was I carried one around for about 3 months. It got a little curve to it on the outside of the book, and that was from carrying it. And I went out and got drunk after been going to AA for about 3 months, and was out for a few days and came back to meeting Alcoholics Anonymous and said, hey, you know everything you need to do. Just got to decide if you want to do it or not. That book continued to be carried with me, but I started to read it a little bit. And when I got a couple years sober, I moved and was looking to figure out how to fit back into Alcoholics Anonymous where I was at. And I asked the guy to be my sponsor, and he said, I'm not very good at that, but we'll do it the way I know how. And he invited me over to his house, and he opened up the book and said, this is the blank page. And now we're going to read every black letter and every word on every white page from here on out. And I haven't had a drink since then, and I'm extremely grateful for that. And thank you all for being here so I can have a meeting.
I'm Shashi, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
You know, one thing I found about this book is that I'm a Hindu, and we have a Gita. And my grandfather told me that all these big books in all these different religions, Bible and Quran, they were trying to help you find the God. And for us alcoholic, I think this is my Bible. You know, this is my Gita. Because from there, I found the God. And I think, thank you.
Thank you all very much for sharing. And would you help me please close this meeting with the Serenity Prayer?